Burning Bridges with Margo.
Burned a lot of bridges.
Every Saturday, 2 to 4 p.m. on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com.
And to donate, go to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com/pledge. That's RadioFreeBrooklyn.com/pledge.
You're listening to Burning Bridges with Margo on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com, and I'm your fire starter, Margo Avedisian. This episode has new name Malik, who just made her debut at Carnegie Hall as a violin soloist. I just saw her after the interview, and I literally had tears in my eyes listening to her music. It was so moving. She also talks about how she's reviving the lost Armenian music that was suppressed during the genocide. And she plays a song for me in the studio as well, so you can definitely hear that. And I'm very honored that you're listening, so thank you so much, and hope you enjoy. You're listening to Burning Bridges with Margo on Radio Free Brooklyn. And I'm your fire starter, Margo Avedisian, and we have a super special guest today. We have an amazing violinist. She's making her debut at Carnegie Hall. I think that's how you're actually supposed to sell it. And she won a Waldo Mayo Award, and this is her solo debut, and we are very lucky to have her on our show. So thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Hi, Margo.
Hi. So I always start the first, I always have the first question of, has there ever been a bridge that you burned and you thought it was a bad thing, but then it turned out to be one of the best things that ever happened to you?
It's actually a very good question. I think I'm more of a builder. I like building bridges more than burning them. And you should really make me mad, or it should be a really critical situation for me so I can really burn the bridge. But the only thing that comes to my mind is that when I was 19, I was at the Moscow State Conservatory. It's one of the most prestigious universities, musical universities and institutions in the world. And I just wasn't happy with my teacher, even though I was a top contender and I was a top student there. And I moved by myself without knowing any language almost to Canada. And my family stayed in Moscow, and I had not a single soul in Canada. So that was maybe the only time when I actually burned all the bridges, and I was born and raised in Russia, so it was my, let's say, home country, even though I never felt at home there. And it was difficult, but funny enough, I never regretted it, and while I was doing it, I actually didn't think it was a bad idea, but that's the only thing that comes to my mind.
Okay. And when did you start playing the violin?
I started playing violin when I was 6 years old. I started playing piano at four because my sister was a very good pianist and my mom used just to take us together to the music school. And at the age of six, I remember my mom told me, hey, do you want to try violin? And very confidently for 6 years old, I said, oh, well, you know, I already know how to play piano. Let me learn violin now. So, yeah, I started at six.
And why did you decide to stick with violin over piano?
I have no idea. But my mom recalls that I was, you know, while my lesson was over, I was always running to the violin classes, you know, and I was standing at the doors and listening to the violin sound. So that's why she had the idea to give me to the violin lessons.
Oh, yeah. Wow. How old are you now?
I'm 25.
Okay. Are you considered, you're considered a prodigy, right?
I don't know. I think I'm already too old for that. Yes, having Justin Bieber's and Selena Gomez is at 20. No, yeah, but I don't think I'm a prodigy.
Yeah, but they're not really talented, though.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing, actually, is it pronounced Carnegie or Carnegie? Because Andrew Carnegie, who it's named after, that's how you pronounce his name. But everyone in New York calls it Carnegie Hall.
Carnegie Hall. Actually.
Yeah.
I'm playing at Carnegie Hall, yeah.
Okay, because in New York people say Carnegie Hall, but the person it's named after, his name was actually pronounced Carnegie.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, let me pronounce it the right way, but then people just think you're a jerk, so.
No, I don't think so, actually, but I think I've been pronouncing it Carnegie Hall.
Carnegie, yeah, that's what everyone does, but
You can be different, Margot. It's okay.
Like, well, actually, it's pronounced this way. And then people are like, what is wrong with you? How can you make classical music even snobbier? I know, telling them they're not pronouncing it correctly.
Exactly.
That's burning a bridge there, check.
No, actually, there's a lot of cases like that. For example, you know, people like say a lot of like Beethoven, you know, or even if we go to French pronunciation, they say Mozart, but it's not Mozart, it's Mozart, you know, and it's not Beethoven, it's Beethoven because it's from German. So, I mean, we have a lot of things like that in classical music.
Yeah, even though Andrew Carnegie lived in New York. He like lived in New York, but that's okay. But anyway, that's so amazing and prestigious. Are you really excited?
I am thrilled. I'm also very I don't feel nervous, but you know, it's funny, I'm feeling like I'm concentrating like every day, you know, I'm just becoming more and more not tense but like more and more concentrated. And you know, I'm really happy because I just started my doctorate and at McGill University in Montreal.
Oh, nice.
And it's a terrible university in a way that it's an amazing one and it's very demanding. So I have so many courses and I have so much homework to do. And in some way, it's actually great for me because I'm not only thinking about Carnegie Hall and how stressful is it and how, you know, exciting it is. I'm also thinking about my everyday life tasks, you know, that I have to do. Like, I know it's ridiculous maybe, but I'm thinking about my seminars and I'm thinking about that I have to do my homework at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is it about music? Are you taking classes
about
music?
I'm doing doctorate actually in Armenian and Georgian music. We're just going to go there a little bit later if you want to. But it's just funny. I was thinking, oh my God, you know, finally I'm getting this Carnegie Hall thing that every musician has been dreaming about, you know, his entire life. And I'm not like 100% there in a good way, you know, like, I mean, I don't have time to stress out too much because I have another things to think about. So I think that's, well, but of course my 90% of my time goes to the preparations and everything. But at the same time, I think I'm balanced right now.
Yeah, you're not overanalyzing it.
Exactly.
And freaking psyching yourself out.
Exactly.
Wait, so how many hours do you practice a day?
I just had this question yesterday by a friend of mine. Pretty much like athletes, you know, it's everyday torture for my neighbors. And
well, I don't know if they'd call it torture. They know where you're performing next week. They get it for free.
Exactly. Yeah, but it starts... Right now, it starts from 3 hours, which is not a lot, honestly, for a musician. When I was a teenager, I would start from 5 to 11. But now it's from 3 to maximum that I can't get right now. It's like 7 hours, maybe. But it's a luxury, you know, because now you have to work. You have to do a lot of other things, you know. So 3 is a minimum. 7 right now for me is a maximum.
Wow. So after you get your doctorate, do you want to be a full-time musician? Is that what you
I mean? Am already. And you know, it's since you're since I'm 6 years old, I always had this dream. I always had a determination to be a musician. Even when I was just starting it, and I was living in a little city called Kazan. It's a Tartar city, actually, very close to Moscow. And then, you know, 15 years later, my classmates found me on whatever social media, and they said, you know, it's so funny, we remember you talking about that you're going to be a violinist, you know, and that you're going to be professional, you're going to be one of the best. And, you know, 15 years later, they still see me playing, like, you know, and this. So I don't recall that, but they reminded me that I always wanted to be a musician. And as they say, you know, being a musician is a 24-hour non-paid job. So this is pretty much how it goes since the beginning. And I think I'm already a professional since I was 6 years old. So it's a full-time job.
Yeah. Well, so to get paid doing it, is that when you're like a first chair and you're part of a symphony? Like, what's your kind of,
you know, nowadays, unfortunately, and it doesn't matter if we're speaking about classical music or pop music, maybe you've noticed it in pop music, the more primitive you go, the more money you can get. So it's either you're on the top with the top orchestras, with the top conductors, top managements, or you have to compromise and you have to play gigs, you know, and like weddings. And so it is really, it's a hard, it's a very complicated question to get paid, because it really does depend on what are you ready to do for that. You know, I've reached some reputation and level. For example, I have, you know, the violin from Canada Council for Arts, and it's a great opportunity. It's a huge honor. I cannot just go and play gigs, you know, like I cannot just go and play on the weddings. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not because I'm snobby or I think it's just it's already not of my level.
Yeah.
So getting paid, yes, you can get a great opportunity in an orchestra if you want to. And not only the first chair, you can be the second chair. And but you have to love the orchestral music. I'm not sure it's something that I really want to do. And I've been always against the idea. I'm just not feeling comfortable in the huge, you know, collective, I don't know, like ensemble. I'm not feeling that I can express myself the way I want. So I don't think the orchestral career is going to be something for me. But it's a very good job, and it's a job. It's actually not even a profession for me. It's a job. It's something that is very mundane and routine-ish. And it's a very well-paid job if you get in, which is huge.
It's very prestigious.
It's very prestigious, but it's very hard to get in.
Yeah.
You have to understand. I have a friend of mine, which I'm really happy for. He has been doing, I think he has done 36 auditions.
Whoa.
36 auditions all over United States to get into any orchestra, just any. And you know what? At the end, he got into the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra.
Oh, wow.
And it's the most well-paid orchestra in the world.
Oh, wow.
And I'm really happy about him. But can you imagine 36 times getting no's? So, yes, it's a struggle.
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like people are there kind of for life, too. Once you're there, it's until you literally can't play anymore. So that could be...
And Margot, they want to be. There are so many musicians who are dreaming about this career. And, you know, I'm so jealous to them. You know, I wish I could just... That would be my goal, you know, like just to get a good job in orchestra and be happy with that.
So what's your goal? And because when you're playing at Carnegie Hall, it's you standing up and then you just have the other... the other orchestra, like, behind you. It's different than if you're part of it.
I want to put it that way, because we're still collaborating, and in any case, it's collaboration, and they couldn't do the job without me, and I couldn't do the job without them. But I love being soloist, for sure, and this is what I'm aiming for. My dreams, I actually have so many goals. I really have to organize them in a better way, but for now, it's... besides, you know, academical work, I really want to promote the Armenian and Georgian music, the music of my heritage. It's being a soloist and having a decent career. And also, I really like chamber music. So, you know, trios and quartets. I would go with the trio. That might be it for a couple of years right now. But then I have other plans.
When I think of violin solo, I think of the European or the world music thing, and like Moldova had this electric violin with lights, and I was just like, what is this? This is so funny. But that's kind of in getting a little popular too, the violinists with the light up violin.
Well, as
performing.
I told you, the more primitive it goes, the better it is. And I don't want to offend anyone, you know, in a bad sense, but it has to be, let's say, not primitive. Let's change it. Comprehensive. So, you know, people like effects and people like lightings. And I actually don't know about this Moldovan violinist. I'm going to check it out right after. But you know, we can see it in all sorts of music, in all fields of music, that it should be really about special effects more.
Yeah, well, it's like instead of quality or talent, it's more of theatrical.
Exactly.
So you grew up in Russia.
Yeah.
And you are Armenian.
Yeah.
Are your parents from Russia?
No, not at all. Actually, I have I have a mixture of blood. I have, apparently, recently I learned that I have Jewish blood and I have some Georgian blood as well. But yes, mostly I was elevated and educated in Armenian traditions. My parents are, my father is from Armenia, Gyumri, and my mom is actually, she was born in Georgia. So that's the Georgian and Jewish blood comes from. And they were studying in Siberia in the medical... Yeah, I know.
Oh, wow.
It's just ridiculous. So they were studying at the medical university there. And they were the only... I think there were three Armenians at the university and there were two guys and my mom.
Oh, she got to pick which one.
Yeah, she got to pick. So she picked my father. So I was born actually in Siberia. And then we went to another little city that I mentioned and Kazan. And then I was already brought up in Moscow. For 10 years, I lived in Moscow.
Was it scary living in Moscow?
Yes. I don't like talk about this topic because I get not politically correct. But it's not the most safest place, especially if you're not Russian.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And does your family still live there?
Thankfully, no. They actually were granted the extraordinary ability green card because my father, my entire family is in medicine, as you figured out from the university, and my father is a great scientist, and my sister and my brother work with him. So my sister got the green card, and my father and my brother is now working on that. So, yeah. They moved to LA around maybe like 6 months ago, which I'm really happy about.
Oh, wow. So now you don't have to visit them in Moscow.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, that must be pretty scary. Someone asked me to speak once in Moscow about Bitcoin, and Moscow's not friendly, or Russia's not friendly to Bitcoin. I'm like, no, I'm not going to speak there about something the government doesn't like. Oh. I don't want to disappear.
I actually didn't know that. Wow, okay.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what their position is now, but at the time they were very anti it because they don't want people moving out their assets, you know? So if people are moving their money out of Russia, they don't like that. And if they can't track everything too, but I was not going to take any chances going to Russia. And,
you know, I think the main problem in Russia in general, which makes me sad, first of all, it's that it's the country with a very, very, rich cultural heritage. But 90% of, okay, not 90, but 80% of the population is not even aware of that. And people do not respect their traditions. And if you don't respect your traditions and if you don't know your history, you're not able to appreciate other people's history and other people's traditions. So that's the main issue. And the second one is, of course, the governmental system, which is made terribly and... it's just everything is against you. Everything is so difficult and people are very angry and aggressive. And especially if you're Armenian or Georgian or Turkish or it doesn't matter. If you're not Russian, it gets really complicated there and they're pretty racist. So that was the main issue. For example, just to give you an idea, I would never let my hair loose until I actually went to Canada. Because my mom said, oh, you know, you're more noticeable like that. You see, like, my hair is curly, long, black hair, and I was always attached. Like, my hair was always attached, you know, because there were skinheads on the streets, and it wasn't safe. And we're talking not about 20 or 30 years ago. We're talking about literally, like, 7 years ago, you know?
Yeah. Wow. And in the capital, that's so scary. Well, that's great that you got out. So you went to the Moscow University... and
conservatory.
And then after that, where did you end up going?
Well, I as I told you, I wasn't really happy with my teacher, actually. And the minute when I got there, which was really actually hard to get there, I just realized, okay, I'm going to leave. And I always wanted to. I learned German language because I was sure I'm going to go to Germany. Then I changed my mind. I was like, no, you know. And actually, it's funny. And not to, again, like, not to be, like... politically incorrect, but, you know, we're Armenians and we have really complicated story and history with Turkish people. And I had a trip before that. I had to go to Germany and I saw how many Turkish people are there. And I just realized, oh, my God, I'm not going to be comfortable in this country, you know. And, you know, maybe I was just also a teenager.
Where in Germany?
I went to Austria. I went in Vienna.
Yeah, I love Vienna.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God, it's
so
a beautiful
pretty
city. Yeah, but you know, I went to the like subway station, you know, and I would say, oh my God, like I was seeing, you know, the newspapers written in Turkish, and I was like, oh my God, this is not German, like, this is not the culture that I was expecting to be in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The everyday life. And I decided, okay, I'm not going to go to Germany. I'm not going to go to Austria. And already, you know, it's called Zweite Istanbul, which means the second Istanbul, you know. And there's a lot of... population is huge. And it is what it is. So I decided, okay, I'm going to go to United States. And then just by accident, I got this contact of an incredible violin teacher in Canada. And it's a Francophone university, Université de Montréal. And I pretty much had to learn the language in 2.5 months, French language, which I actually did.
Wow. And you know six languages, right?
Was that five. I'm learning my sixth one right now.
Okay.
The Spanish one.
You only
is
know five. Geez.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes they're really mixing in my head. But while I was actually finishing the first year of Moscow Conservatory, I just decided, okay, I have to make this jump, you know. And I learned French real quick, and I moved to Canada, and I did my master's degree at the Université de Montréal. And I was the youngest student there who would do the master's. And they actually didn't want to accept me because it's a very bureaucratic country and it's very, you know, stable. And they don't like exceptions, let's say. So it was quite a big deal for them to accept me because I was only 19 and I finished it when I was like 20. And then I moved to New York. I got lessons with another professor, and I started having concerts and more exposure. And then I'm doing my doctorate at McGill right now. Just started it 2 weeks ago.
So, but you live in New York, or do you have to go to...
I'm actually living in between. I'm pretty much living in between. I was in New York like three weeks ago, and I went back to Montreal. I think I'm going to be more based in Montreal.
Until winter comes.
Exactly, because my family lives in Los Angeles. We don't forget that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be free on December, I think, 6th or something. I'm also, that's a great thing about my profession, I'm an artist in residence of Miami Chamber Orchestra, so I get to play there from time to time. So
is that whenever you want or when they invite you?
No, we have to synchronize our schedules, of course, because now especially I'm much more busier than I was. So I mean, with my schedule is more tight. So no, they ask me if I can fly, and that's how it works.
Oh, that's awesome! That building is so beautiful. It's like a Frank Gehry building. I think he designed it. In Miami?
Yeah.
It's so pretty, and it's right in South Beach.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. I'm from South Florida, so...
Oh, nice.
I've walked past it. Not that it's that old, and I haven't lived there since then, but that's so interesting, and that it's interesting the perspective that you are worried, because I guess I'm lighter skinned. I didn't grow up really Armenian, and my grandparents were my... I'm half Armenian, so my dad's side and my dad's dad and mother were super into Armenian stuff, or maybe not super, but my grandfather was. And so he started the first Armenian church in Florida and met the Armenian Pope or whatever. But I never really, every once in a while would go there, but I didn't really grow up with a lot of Armenian people. And in college, this girl said to me, oh, I've never seen an Armenian without their pack, you know, because there's always a lot of family and people around. So I guess I don't really have that worry. Sometimes when I meet a Turkish person, like from Turkey, I don't really tell them because there is kind of a little bit.
You know, it's funny. I actually, one of my best students that I have, they're Turkish and they're Turkish family, and they're really great people. And it's terrible for me to realize actually how similar we are with these people. And we don't have to mix the politics, the political system, you know, that has been not the best, and people. So, but I think also we have something on the DNA level. It's something that you can't really fight, but you should, I think, in a very subtle manner. So, of course, when I'm teaching and when I have professional relationships, there is nothing that comes to, you know, to the map. I mean, they're great girls. They're working hard. The family is great. You know, they're treating me very well, and I'm being as professional as I can. But I really understand the it really is something inside of you that you can't fight. And I don't know. It's not even for me. It's not even the question of education. It's more just a DNA thing. I don't know. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, for those who don't really know what we're talking about.
go to Kim Kardashian's, you know, like, post. You'll get there.
Yeah. About the Armenian genocide, the first modern-day genocide around 1910?
1915.
1915. How long did it go on? It was a couple of years.
Actually, it didn't happen. The biggest one happened in 1915, but there were a couple of them before and after. So, but that one was for almost a year.
So it's Turks in Turkey, actually in Armenia, and a lot of now Turkey, used to be Armenia, just rounded up Armenian people and murdered them. Like with my family back then, the stories I was told was my great-grandmother, what her family was, they facilitated trade with the Turks, and they're kind of like nobility, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh, we're not going to do anything to your family. And my great-grandmother's husband was a doctor, and he asked this other doctor, if anything happened, can you take care of my family? And then the Turks came in and murdered everyone.
Of course.
My great-grandmother was taken care of by this doctor that her husband arranged with her kids, and then eventually escaped to Boston. But I think when you talked about the DNA thing, I think really what it is that there's never been any closure, because the Turkish government refuses to acknowledge this happens, or they'll say, oh, we were, it was retaliatory. I mean, it's not retaliatory if you're rounding up women and children and
burning them in the church.
Or leaving them in a desert so they starve. And not ever having that closure, and still even now denying it. And the Turkish government spends a lot of money pumping into
billions,
U.S. universities.
Billions of money.
To teach that it never happened. And it's really, and Hitler said, you know, to justify the genocide he committed was, no one remembers the Armenians. And it's true, you know, if there's no accountability, then it just paves the way for people to continue doing atrocious things.
But, you know, I don't know if that is because we had a 100th year anniversary last year. I'm actually seeing a good shift towards recognizing it and speaking about it. And it always bothered me, again, like, even though I have a Jewish blood, it always bothered me that there are so many movies about the Holocaust, you know, and big movies, I mean, Schindler's List and, you know, Pianist, et cetera, et cetera. And no one ever, like, made a big movie about Armenian genocide. And now it's a tendency that it's changing, actually. You know, there's going to be The Promise. There's going to be another movie. And it's I mean, huge caliber people who are directing and playing and acting in it. So as for the government, I don't know if they ever will be able to accept it, because I'm not very... and even for Turkish people, we have to understand that the government right now, even for Turkish people, is not good.
Yeah.
It's just not a friendly environment there at all. But I'm really happy to see this shift, you know, that people are starting to talk about that, and the fact that it was a New York Times, you know. But another thing, again, we're going back and we're talking about money, and Turkish government spends billions of money, and just the fact with the Wall Street thing, you know.
When they did an
it's
ad
ridiculous.
In the Wall Street Journal denying it. Well, you know, I was in an Uber, and my driver was Turkish, and we got on the subject because I was just interested. I'm not blaming anyone, but what he said was that, you know, one of the reasons they probably don't want to admit it is because then they're going to want retribution. You know,
of course,
Armenians.
The lands. I mean, we don't have to forget that we had three seas and now we don't have any.
Yeah,
so they took two seas already. Like, we don't have the sea.
Yeah.
And we had two. That eastern, the eastern Turkey right now was Western Armenia. So, of course, once they say, yes, we did that,
yeah,
we have to understand that Armenians are going to claim the lands.
Yeah.
So this is pretty much why it's not... Even though it's funny because no one lives at this land. I don't know why they're keeping it to themselves. There is no one who is living. But what bothers me the most, Margot, and you're speaking about murders, and I mean, if you just read how, or if you know, maybe you know how, the ways they were murdering people, you know, that they were, like, violating people in front of their, like, families. And, I mean, it's one subject, but... They also robbed us from our cultural heritage, you know, and how much music, you know, how many music, like me as a musician, you know, was hidden and like was just destroyed. And the churches, for example, right now, they're saying that they're Georgian churches, you know, and they're making this program, touristic program, you know, they're inviting people and saying, you know, this is a Georgian church, which is not Georgian, you know, it's actually Armenian. So That's what, maybe because I'm a musician, you know. Okay, the genocide happened, and I mean, it's terrible, but also they robbed us from our culture, you know, and we were always about the culture, and that what bothers me the most.
Yeah, we don't even know paintings and things like that disappeared, because, I mean, Armenian churches are probably the most beautiful churches ever. I mean, they're just so ornate and beautiful, and so who knows what was even really lost with that. But so the music, that's really what you're passionate about, and that's the Hidden Treasure Project? That's what you're...
Yeah, but it's not actually about genocide. And, you know, someone told me, you can get an Armenian, speak to Armenian without mentioning genocide. And I remember I didn't like this phrase, and because it's true. You see, like, just two Armenians, you know, we're meeting in Brooklyn, and while I was speaking about that.
Well, we're on a radio show. I probably wouldn't just bring it up if I met you. Like, so that genocide was really terrible, wasn't
what
it?
What do you feel about them? Yeah. No. But, I mean, it always comes up. And even it's a very tempting subject, for example, for me, for my doctorate right now. I'm thinking about that, you know, writing something about the influence of Armenian genocide on the course of... And I'm going to do something similar. I'm going to maybe have a link between history, historical circumstances, and, you know, the development of Armenian and Georgian music. But, you know, the Hidden Treasure Project is pretty much about... I'm trying not to cover it again with Armenian genocide, because I'm a very positive person. I don't really want to focus on that. Yeah, exactly. I don't like looking in my past. So yeah. I'm trying to be concentrated on what I can do in my future and in my present moment. So the Hidden Treasure is pretty much to highlight the music of Armenia and Georgia, because they've been just great works in Georgia, but mostly in Armenia. That is absolutely unknown to Northern American public. And I have been already doing it since I was 20, so it's been 5 years. It all started because we started playing a trio that no one knew, Arno Babajanyan. I don't know if you know the composer. It was at the University of Montreal. And everyone loved it so much, starting from my colleagues, my chamber music coach, to the public. And everyone loved it. And I was like, okay, maybe, you know, I should play it more often. And I started organizing the concerts. And, of course, I was in difficulties. I was always in minus, you know, financially. But I would start series, you know, and I would always introduce the pieces and talk about Komitas and Aram Khachaturian and Arno Babajanyan, et cetera, et cetera. And the name actually came to me when we started to work on the CD, my debut CD, that is actually being really complicated right now. But I'm really looking forward, and I think this year we should launch the CD. Because it is a music, it's a treasure-like music. The music, the quality of music is amazing. It's really beautiful. And it doesn't matter where I play that, whether in Caribbean, in the United States, in Armenia, in Russia, or in Canada, everyone is in awe with it. But no one knows about it. No one speaks about it. It's not integrated into the repertoire of violinist or, you know, chamber.
Even in Armenia, it's not?
Funny enough, in 2013, I went to Armenia after 13 years gap. I haven't been in Armenia for 13 years because I've been busy with my travelings and getting my diplomas, etc. And then I went there for my research. And I think I'm undertaking another trip this year, this summer. Even in Armenia, of course, they know who Arnold Babajanian is. But, for example, I faced a lot of difficulties finding music shit. And I went to the Union of Composers, Composers Union. It's a very Soviet name. And Union. And, you know, I literally spent like 2.5 hours in the library, closed library, all just covered in dust on my, you know, knees. And I was like trying to pick the music, the music score. And like I copied that. And I think it was like around 20 pounds that I brought back of music. There are no music stores in Armenia, and it's actually very sad. And even Armenians, right now, again, with the government that is happening in the country, I don't think Armenians are aware. Of course, they know the names. Of course, they know Mirzoyan and, you know, and again, Babajanian and Komitas and Spindyaryan and all those people. They know, but it's not really promoted and it's not really heard that much.
Oh, wow. So you literally were digging in some library and looking at things that people haven't looked in for years,
for like not even like 10 years. I mean, it was ridiculous. The state of the music was, I mean, the state of the library was just, it made me, actually, it really terrified me because I'm not talking, and there was like some old harpsichord, you know, like.
I love harpsichords.
But I mean, it was like, it was on the floor, so I had to like, you know, like pull it, you know, I had to like, in order to get access to the music. I mean, I'm not saying it just to show how fit I am, you know, that I was able to pull the harpsichord, but I mean, the fact
hidden.
That, yeah, exactly.
It's literally hidden.
It's
like
literally
hidden treasure.
Hidden,
it was,
you know?
Literally.
Yeah.
Wow. So do you think there's more out there that you just have?
Yes, I'm going to go back there. But right now I'm going to also concentrate, you know, and the McGill gives me the possibility to make it in more academical level, you know, and to really to integrate it. And I'm actually, right after Carnegie Hall, I'm going to make the series in Montreal. And I really like the medium of lectures, recitals, because first, I started just playing recitals, and people wouldn't understand. They would come to me, you know, and like and ask me a lot of questions. And I was like, okay, I have to explain the music, you know, and I have to say a couple of things. And I really like speaking about our music in general. And it just happened that I just designed some lectures, and I was already lecturing it, for example, the Wayne State University in Detroit. So I really like introducing the music and then playing it. And it actually makes people much closer to the music.
Yeah, they can feel it and understand and see
exactly.
The story. I think that's awesome. I don't know why they don't do that more often, actually.
Because I think, you know, we want to be on the stage and we want to be...
It's more traditional.
Yeah,
you can read it in the book, I guess.
So. Yeah, exactly. But you can't read, like, you can read about Bach, Chacon, even though, you know, even about the such work as Bach, Chacon, I can tell you so many things that you would never read. Just because, you know, you get some access to people who know things or, you know, some resources that are hidden. But no one's going to really talk to you about Komitas, you know, or, like, about the influence of Komitas on Mansuryan. Like, I mean, you have to know, you have to be. And I'm pretty much, how ambitious it sounds, I'm an expert in that. I'm
wow.
an expert in
and you're
music,
like the only person doing this
for now in violin and in chamber music. Yes, and you know, we also don't have to forget the, like, I don't want to say that, like, not my level, you know, but my background, you know. I feel really privileged, Margot, because I speak languages.
Yeah,
I can literally say I can read something, not that well in Armenian, but I can read something in Armenian or in Russian. Yes, something that is only available in Russian or in Armenian, some books or something, articles. And I can translate it to English or French, or if I really want to, in German. So you see, like, I have such a broad audience right away, just knowing the languages. And also, you know, being not a bad violinist, I hope, you know, and having just some reputation and name, that brings me also a lot of possibilities. But there are a couple of people I know, they're doing kind of the same thing. So I'm very happy about it, because for me it's not about highlighting myself. It's really about highlighting the music.
That's so awesome. That's really cool. When you're at your Carnegie Hall show, are you playing Armenian music?
No. There are so many people talking about that. Actually, what's amazing, and again, if you talk about, like, if you think about the some higher power spiritual thing, which I believe in, it's amazing that something so important for me and for every, I think for every musician would be, is very important. It just goes with the same date of 25th anniversary of the Independence Day of the Republic of Armenia. So it's absolutely the same day, and I'm playing the concert, and I felt really special about that, and it was just, it just made me smile. But no, the concerto that I'm going to play, it's a concerto by Jean Sibelius. It has nothing to do with Armenia, and it's actually one of the most beautiful concertos ever written for violin. I really love it. It's really so beautiful. And yes, since the competition is not from Armenian organization, I could have played Khachaturian concerto, for example.
Do you pick or do they pick?
We actually, with them particularly, we had a discussion. So they asked me for three choices. I gave them three choices. And we got to decide. We were thinking about Brahms concerto, violin concerto, or I know it's not very interesting for you, but either Brahms or Sibelius. And we chose Sibelius because it goes better with the program. And also, you know, we have to understand that me being from the Caucasus, you know, and having my heritage, it is very important, and it's a very important branch of my art, and most likely it's going to be the most important. But I got the education from all over the world. I've been traveling, you know, and I had master classes from the best teachers, and I have pretty academical background also. So me playing on Carnegie Hall, you know, with Armenian concerto, being Armenian, you know, it's a little bit kind of too much. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
It's you Not also yet, want
to,
you know?
Exactly. You also want to be multi yeah. diverse musician, which I'm really wanting to be, you know, I'm really willing to be. So that's why I didn't even propose to play Khachaturian concerto. I just decided, okay, I can do Sibelius, and why not?
Yeah. Well, that's cool. They let you actually have a say in what you wanted
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Since, because you're playing with senior people, right? Who else is in the orchestra?
Yes, this orchestra is actually very interesting, and there's not a lot of coverage about them. They're all retired from the best orchestras in the world, literally New York Phil, Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, and I think there are some of Broadway players. I just had the first rehearsal with them yesterday, and the conductor is from New York Phil also. His name is David Gilbert. And you get to play with people who played with pretty much all the legends that were there. Can you imagine, like,
yeah.
there is a violinist who's been the first violin of New York Phil for 20 years.
Wow.
Can you imagine the amount of people he played with? I mean,
yeah.
like, huge soloists, you know, and a huge conductor. So there are, like, legends sitting there, you know, and playing. So for me, that's a really, that's a big not concern, but this is something I really appreciate, you know. I understand that they have a history, you know, and they have beautiful ears, and they have, they have ears that are very trained for the beautiful sound, because they used to hear so many, and they used to work with such incredible violinists, and not only pianists.
Well, it's probably an awesome way to even network, too, because they aren't full-time, they're kind of retired, and they want to probably give back, and they have the kind of time to do that. So it's probably, you can pick up a mentor.
You know, too. I actually yesterday I was looking at them, and I was thinking, oh my God, that you know, I'm trying to be in shape. I'm trying to be as physically healthy as possible, because being a musician is pretty athletic. I mean, you should have a lot of strength. You should have a lot of flexibility, and your ability to be a musician and to be a performer directly is connected with your physical condition. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not only what you think. Or yes, of course, you're getting more and more mature. So you're hitting 30s and 40s and 50s. And then, you know so much. You can play so many things. But, for example, your physical abilities are not as strong, as they were, of course, at 20. So I just realized that I have to take care of myself as, because oftentimes when we're young, we don't think about those things. We just, we just grab everything, and trying to be as productive as possible. Oftentimes we're forgetting about our bodies. But for musicians, it's very important.
Well, that's another instrument you need to take care of.
Exactly.
Your body.
Exactly. Because it's really directly connected. And while you can be a teacher and, a professor and, while you're 60 and 70 and 80, and I know those people, and they're the most incredible, professors out there. If you want to play, you should really take care of those things, because it's... So I would say, we're not like a ballet dancers, but still we have to really consider that. And it just made me realize yesterday that,
You look pretty in shape, though. So I don't know. Yeah, realization.
Exactly.
You had.
But like when I'm gonna be 60,
yeah,
I want to be able to play. And I know some people who are 80, and you have no idea that they're playing amazingly. And I look at them like, how on earth is it even possible? So, no, I just realized that it's gonna happen to me most likely unless I die before. So I should. No, it's something that I'm really grateful for. I'm reflecting on that, and I'm just thinking, okay, I really have to take care of my body and how, because it's so hard to get detached from your instrument, Margot.
Yeah.
And me, I really want to play until the last day of my life.
Yeah, I mean, you are a person with a mission. Like, you're here to...
Hopefully.
It feels like you have a bigger purpose here. It's not about you. And it seems like you already know that, and you're determined and you're thinking about the future because you have a lot of stuff you need to do.
Because, they say that musician is not a profession, and it's a lifestyle. And I really do agree with that. It's very hard to detach yourself from your profession. While you're an accountant, you can just go to your job, which you might hate or not, 9 to 5. And then, from 5 o'clock, you're a free person until 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
We don't have that. I don't know what time musicians usually wake up. Usually it's very late. But you wake up and you're in that. And it never ends. It's during the nights you're thinking about that. I'm often practicing in my dreams. So it's really something that is always with you. And I think for me it's going to be really hard to detach myself. Even when I'm 60, 70, like, I really want to do what I'm like doing right now.
Yeah.
So that's why, yeah.
How do you have a boyfriend then? How do you have time for that?
I don't. I really don't. My private life is really, really complicated. And
because you don't even live in one place.
Exactly.
And you travel a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Is he a musician too?
No. No, he's not. But I don't know. It's actually, I don't know. I'm just realizing at some point, You're touching a very subtle matter, because at some point I understand that it's very important to have a family. And, I'm Armenian, so you can't just throw that away. It's your genes, it's in your DNA. I really want to have a good family. And I know once I will have a family, I will do my best to be a good mother and a good wife and whatever that means, even though I don't cook. But... I understand that I just can't allow myself right now to have a family or even think about the babies. And while, I'm like going through the news feed of my classmates in Russia or whatever, they all have babies. I mean, they all by the age, and in Russia it's not a normal thing. Some of them have two. Some of the children are already 5 years old, and I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, I'm so late. But
you're only 25 years.
But,
okay.
Still, yeah.
Yeah.
But we have different, different mentalities. But at the same time, I just realized, no, I can't do that right now. I'm so concentrated on things. So having private life, I don't even call that having a private life. I mean, I don't really have that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really
trying. What's not a priority? Your priority is your studies in music.
Yes.
And
if the person, I'd say that, if the person is ready to follow me, then you're welcome. But in our case, it's just not going to be. And I can tell you, I didn't have a lot of relationships in my life, almost non-existent. I always say my private life is not, almost non-existent, because I just never had time for that. And I'm not even sure about my current situation right now. I mean, it's not because I'm not sure in the person or I'm not sure in myself. It's just, I don't even know where I'm going to be in a year, literally. Yeah. And most likely, whatever I'm going to be in my little room, you know, practicing things and, like, writing emails and working on, you know, articles, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah, that's your priority and mission right now.
For a couple of years, for sure.
So is it, do musicians date other musicians?
Yeah, I hate that. I had a couple of stories, nothing serious in... Musicians are very particular type of people. I don't know if you've noticed by talking to me, but I think I tend to be a normal person. I'm trying to be as normal as possible, as down-to-earth as possible. I'm trying to read not only musical journals and magazines. I loved reading Wall Street Journal before that, for example. And I'm trying to be multi, you know, developed. And I'm really trying to understand that, you know, it is my profession and it is my lifestyle. But whatever happens to my finger, for example, tomorrow, you know, I may not get this possibility, God forbid, you know. And it's very important to understand that you're a human being and you're a person first, and then you're a musician. And a lot of musicians forget about that. And I don't blame them. And a lot of male musicians, you know, if you'd ask me one thing that is characterized for musicians, it's ego. It's a huge ego. We're very, and it's not because, you know, like, it's a bad ego. It's just we're very egocentrical. Me too. I don't think if I have a huge ego, but I'm very egocentrical, you know, and egocentric. And it just comes from the fact that we're spending one-on-one with our instruments the most of our time. You know, while other people are going and, you know, having fun and they're going to the clubs and, I don't know, just, you know, traveling, we're standing in the room and we're playing, you know, and of course, that affects your brain and everything and your mental health. So ego is a huge thing. And for me, being with a male musician, I don't think our egos would just be able to coexist with each other, you know?
Yeah.
Unless you're very down to earth. And there are a couple of musicians who are like that, but the majority of them, no. You know, we're always thinking about, like, our career and how we're going to proceed in there and, you know, how we sound, how is the sound today, you know, like, yeah, or are we technically in shape? Like, those kind of things that have nothing to do with your life. And nothing to do with the real world.
But if they're so into what they're doing and you're so into what you're doing, then they probably wouldn't be as upset as someone you're with who's like, why does she spend no time with me?
That's a very good observation. Yes, I do agree. But at the same time, I'm always thinking, you know, and I'm actually reflecting it to myself. What if, for example, he's more successful than me in my career? Oh my God, he's going to be in trouble.
Or it's if it's the other way around, then he's probably going to
exactly.
freak out.
But I'm just being honest. I can say that I'm not sure I want my husband or my boyfriend to be as successful as it's possible. I couldn't be with someone who is not successful, because otherwise we don't have things to talk about, or, you know, like, I really like building things again.
Yeah.
But if he is more successful than me in music, oh my God, I don't think I would be able to cope with that. You see?
Or it could, like, push you, or you could learn from him. But yeah, no, I see. Like, and comedians aren't supposed to date other comedians, but they're way crazier than musicians.
Really? Even
that? And it also is bad for business, too, because when they break up, it's all over social media, or if they're together and one gets in trouble.
And they're creating the projects, right? Like, how many, like, couples we have that, you know, like, featured each other in the song, you know?
Yeah.
And then they're like, and who was that? I think it was Justin Timberlake. I know it's a very doubtful example, but Justin Timberlake and Britney.
Spears.
Yeah, I think, like, I mean, like, all those, or, you know, like, Rihanna and Chris Brown. Like, you know, they get the collaborations, and I hope it's going to last with Diana and Rihanna and Drake. But... And then they split, and then they can go on tour together, you know, they can already sing, they can go on the radio together, you know, those kind of things. So in one case, it can be very, very fruitful, but another one, it might
Or they say things about you and then other people can't book you because you had a problem with them. Or, you know, God forbid, you can't now be in this collaboration because he's part of it or whatever, stuff like that. Yeah, I think it's a bad idea. I was just curious if it made sense.
You know, a lot of, and actually there was a survey that showed like how people of different professions, like whom they marry, and the the musicians actually marry their circle by statistics.
Yeah.
And sometimes I really wish my husband would be a musician, or that then he understands some things and I can address them. But in some points, I think, no, I don't really want that. No, I just, you know, it's okay. It's my business. I'll figure it out. And he can have his world and we can just be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what happens next, but yeah.
You like to plan a lot. You think about a lot of stuff. God, I hate bringing them up, but we kind of have to, because when people think of Armenians, they think of the Kardashians.
And they're, yeah.
I mean, it's an annoying example. Believe me, I have a whole stand-up joke about it. But when they went to Armenia, I watched that show, that episode. Everyone was crazy for them. Like, people treated them like royalty there.
You know, we have to, it's, well, first of all, I admire her for not being anyone, literally not having any profession, yeah? And being Kim Kardashian. I mean, this is something, I mean, her mother is a genius, management genius. Whatever the tools they were using, it's incredible. What they've done, listen, she got 45 million from one game. You have to understand that not a lot of male, you know, entrepreneurs are able to do what she's doing without having, you know, some skills. So, no, me being, you know, in this industry, I really understand that she has a talent. And her whatever her image is, I'm sure it's just an image. I'm sure she is a very different person in life. Just something tells me, because she's Armenian, it doesn't matter. What, of course, we, you know, it was a funny a little scene. I went to a pastry shop, I don't know, and the guy said, oh, you know, those Kardashians, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you know, they're so stupid and something like that. And I looked at him, I said, you know what? It's your fault. It's the fault of the population, because that's what we need. And they're giving us something that we need. If you wouldn't watch her show, if you wouldn't get the journals with her and magazines with her covers, she wouldn't be popular. She's just giving something that people are consuming. She's just smart enough to understand what exactly we need. But I think it's our responsibility of what we're consuming. I never get magazines. I never watch TV. I haven't been watching TV for maybe 10 years. I'm really detached. The only attachment with the world is Instagram and Facebook for me. I get all the news from there. And, of course, you know, newspapers. Good newspapers like New York Times, you know, and like Wall Street Journal, like not a crap, like, I don't know. So we are consumers and we decide what we want. And we make the demand. She is popular because this is our time and this is the reality of our time. We want to see her. And she's just giving us whatever. And if we would be more concentrated on art, on culture, on music, on ballet, she would give that. I'm sure she would be able to give it up to us. So we have to take this. That's my opinion about her. Of course, then I've never watched her show more than maybe like 10 minutes because I'm just, my brain just explodes. But we have to, as Armenians, we have to, I don't think she's a reality, but we have to understand one thing. And it's a reality. I had difficult times to admit that. They've been scholars and professors and politicians. And I know those people. And Dashnaks, you know, and the head of the departments of the universities who've been trying to promote Armenian genocide and to talk about it and to bring it to the light. She's done more than those people for 100 years by her Twitter, by her one tweet. And you have just to take, like, you just have to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Whatever you feel about it, whatever I feel about her, she probably doesn't care how I feel about her. So that's already not important. But I really feel grateful for her. And let's not forget when there was a conflict between Nagorno-Karabakh, Azerbaijan and Armenia, when the four-day war broke, she posted on her Instagram, on her Twitter as well about the war. So I think as a media, she, and you know, someone said she saved us so much money by bringing her show to Armenia.
Yeah, it was.
She saved us millions of money, you know. And Turkish government, sorry, I've been having this mistake. Turkish government doesn't have the person like Kardashian.
Yeah.
So that's very important. And I think we have to look at her more as a tool, media tool. It's great. I mean, if she highlighted the Armenian genocide, good for her. Of course, she's done a fortune out of that, and she had some new ideas. You know, she has to have new ideas for bringing her show. We have to understand that. But it's good. She's done something for Armenians, and I'm very happy. I'm really grateful to this woman for that, because I'm much more of Armenian than of, you know, like, again, like, I think my feeling for the country and the human problem that we have, you know, humanitarian problem, is much stronger than, you know, my egos and et cetera, et cetera. And I felt really grateful that she brought it there. And if they treat her as a royalty, maybe they had to, because she's really done a great job for us. And you see, like, a lot of people learned about the genocide from her. And we don't have to forget that she has, like, 80 million followers. Who else would do the same thing? Even Charles Aznavour and Cher and Andrea Agassi.
Yeah.
She's done it. So thanks her.
Yeah, that's true. It's like a positive and negative thing, because on one side, she's kind of a negative kind of portrayal of Armenians, but at the same time, she brought this issue to the world stage.
Look, she's a media person, and we have just to deal with that.
I can't stand the media, which is why I'm trying to start my own media thing and content.
And actually, that's what I'm thinking about too, you know? I'm thinking about media, but like in a music subject. Because I'm just realizing in the last couple of years, and especially in America, in Canada in a less extent, but still, how much power does it have?
Oh, yeah. But it's only controlled by a couple people, a couple billionaires.
Do you know them?
One of my friends is really good friends with Wendy Murdoch, who was dating Putin, actually. But, I mean, she's not married to Murdoch anymore. But...
Is it this lady, the Wendy
yeah,
show?
Wendy.
No.
What?
No. It's not the one. Okay.
She's originally from China, I think.
No. I don't know her. Okay.
Yeah, she's older. She was just, I think she was just with Ivanka Trump the other day. There's pictures of them. I mean, that's the closest that I probably know to one of those billionaires that own the media companies. But I just find it so annoying, because news doesn't mean anything anymore. News doesn't mean accuracy or truth. It's all through a lens, and it's not about what is helpful to people. It's about instilling fear or...
It's interest. It's the war of interest.
Yeah, by just a couple people, like their interest. How can they make more money? Hmm. It's so infuriating to me, but I think things have to change, because no one watches the news unless you're like older person, you know? And people get a lot of their news from Facebook and even Facebook curates what is trending. And that's just so annoying to me, because there's so many inaccuracies of what's going on in the world, and it's like, no.
No, it's not even inaccuracies, yes, but it's like total ignorance, you know? And it's not going to be in the media unless it's of someone's, you know, interest, and that what, like, really makes me mad.
Well, it's like, why? I don't want to hear anything more about the Kardashians. I don't care what they're eating.
Well, you have to, because they're trying to hide things, you know, like by drawing the Kardashians on the front
page. Yeah, exactly. That's why
they're hiding things.
Exactly. They talk about things that don't matter instead of things that do. Who cares about the celebrity culture? Like, I don't care. And you know, most of it is not real anyway.
Yeah.
All those relationships are fake. Not all of them, but most of them. And a lot of people are actually gay, and then they have these relationships. And it's sad to me that now gay people can
get
married.
We're just being fooled.
But you can't be who you really are. And why do we care anyway? Like, why is it a big news thing of who's dating who? Like 90.
It's much more important than the actually acting or whatever singing they do, right?
Yeah.
Their private life is much more important now.
It really shouldn't be, you know. Like talent and hard work. Like, what, I mean, you've put in so many years of your life and so many hours to get to where you are. And that is something that should be celebrated more than your YouTube video of, you know, singing mildly okay, but you're like a cute little boy.
You know, I'm with all my respect, and I mean, like, I'm really destroying maybe a lot of borders here, but I think I realized the power of media when I actually watched Rihanna's live performance. And when I, being a musician, I mean, you can imagine how hard it is for me. You know, I really love music, and I was actually singing. I was at the academy. I took a course of jazz singing, so I had pretty good voice. Just had to stop because I couldn't do so many things at the same time. So I know a little bit about singing and the music in general. I hope so. And, you know, I really like the girl, and I can't say that, you know, I have any feelings about her. I really like her. But when I actually saw how she thinks live, I was like, oh, my God. Like, it's just, it's not even ridiculous. It's unbelievable. I can't believe it. And, the you know, the funniest part is that she is gathering thousands and thousands of people, and people are loving it. So people are so brainwashed. We are unable to actually understand what's good and bad anymore. We are not able to make a judgment anymore. We're just so brainwashed with the media, you know, and they're saying she's good. Okay, so she's good. We're going to get the tickets. And that what saddens me the most, you know. And the other day we were talking about Gigi Hadid, you know, and like Bella Hadid. I mean, come on, guys. It's I don't even want to comment on that. It's just ridiculous. Like, and it's all about money, and it's all about media, and, you know, you can compare Naomi Campbell walking the, you know, Victoria's Secret show and Kendall Jenner walking. I mean, this girl don't even care to work out. Yeah. It goes to that point that these people don't even care to be professional anymore or to be any professional. I'm not even saying highly professional, but somewhat professional.
Yeah.
They don't need that anymore because media makes the rest of the job.
Yeah.
And that's what really, and I just recently realized the power of that, because when I watched her life, I was like, okay, this is really bad. I mean, and it's not bad because she's bad. It's just because she doesn't even need to work.
Yeah.
Because anyone's, you know, she got this award for Michael Jackson, and now right now they say that she's beating, you know, Michael Jackson. I mean, can you understand that? It's not her. It's just media.
Yeah.
And that's really scary.
My hope is, I really think the tide's going to start shifting. I think people are just going to get sick of this. When people who are telling the truth, and like people like you who are, you know, pouring your heart out there, and you have a bigger mission of what you're trying to accomplish, I think that is going to win. You know, and it's just, you just have to keep doing it, and there has to be more people like you.
You are much more positive than I am. I'm not even aiming for that. I would want to be at some point somewhat celebrity in my maybe little circle, because when you're a celebrity, we have to not forget this thing. You have some power.
Yeah.
You have
influence.
Exactly, like Kim Kardashian had, you know, and it's amazing if you can use it exactly for a good reason. But I mean, unless I'm showing my backside, you know, naked on my Instagram, I'm not going to get followers. It's just the truth, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, of course, I will. I'm working my best, and I'm trying to do my best. But I'm not even thinking about, you know, having 40,000 people.
Well, I don't know how you could fit that in your brain, because you're doing so many other things. But, no, I totally hear that. I can't stand social media. It's like I'd rather just focus on whatever it is I'm doing, opposed to all this promoting.
You know, it's not even that. I'm an artist, and I have my ups and downs. And I can tell you that I'm really working very hard. And I don't really have a lot of support because, my parents are not musicians, for instance. And a lot of my friends are saying, you know, it's very hard to keep up with you, keeping up with Kardashian. So they say it's really hard to keep up with you, because I think I'm really living in some crazy mode, because I'm really handling 99% of my career by myself. And the fact that I got to Carnegie Hall, it's not because, you know, oh, my God, like how amazing I am. I'm really proud of that, because I did it in the most honest way possible, and whatever I do, it's very clear, and I have nothing in my life to be ashamed of, so which I think is very important. I forgot why I was saying that, but why was saying that?
Well, what was having before? A level of influence and not promoting yourself, like with the Instagram posts.
Yeah, about the media. But you have to understand that it's just it's a work of huge offices, you know, and the individuals like me, unless I get a sponsorship and millions to, you know, to get an office of people who is going to do my work on social media, you can get out there. I mean, I think I have to be realistic. I really love what I do. And if it can influence, you know, I always think like this. If there is one person at the concert that really loved it, and if there is one person who is touched by the music, it's a successful concert.
Yeah.
Concert. And hopefully, and I think so far it's been more than one person each concert. And, you know, that's what really important for me. If I can just make a person forget about his troubles, his mortgage, his loans, his debt, his children, you know, running nose. If I can just make him forget about all this for this little limited amount of time, whether it's 5 minutes or 30 minutes or 15 minutes or 45 minutes, I'm good. I'm successful.
Well, you have the right intention. I just am very optimistic. You're going to get very far and help a lot of people. But
thank you.
You're just stay in the present, and I think it will all unravel in the way it's supposed to. Why did you change your last name to drop the IAN? That's like what makes
Because
for people who don't know, if someone's last name has IAN, they have 99.9% chance of being Armenian.
And you know, I started having this comment, and I actually blocked a lot of people on my Facebook at some point because they were like, oh, you're trying to hide your Armenian-ness. You know, well, first of all, yes, I'm Armenian. And again, I have a lot of mixes, you know, and we don't have to forget that. But there was nothing about, I mean, having the first name as Nune, it cannot just get more Armenian, you know. So I dropped it simply because it looks better on the posters, believe it or not. And it's in promotional purposes because people, I just got so fed up that people cannot pronounce my name. And, you know, while, for example, they were introducing me to the public, so now it's going to be new name, and I was like, oh, my God, this is not the way you know? So
yeah.
Melik just sounds more short, easier to remember, easier to put on the poster. That's it. And, you know, all the people started saying, oh, how your father feels about that. I'm like, you know, my father is fine. He trusts me.
Yeah.
You know, like me dropping the IAN doesn't make me any less Armenian and any more Armenian. I'm still going to do what I'm doing, and people will understand that I'm Armenian, you know, and I think that's the second phrase that comes from out of my mouth, you know, when I meet people. So I'm not becoming any less Armenian by dropping it. It's just really easier for people to remember. And actually, I had the feedback, and you have no idea how many people were against it and how many people actually changed their opinion after, because they said, oh, you know, actually, yeah, it's easier to remember.
Yeah,
you know, we're living in a very, very fast time, and everything moves so fast and so quickly. People don't have time even to remember your name. It should be short. That's why Jamie Foxx is Jamie Foxx. You know, he's not Jamie Foxx.
Most actors change their name. Most any celebrity performer has changed their name.
Yeah,
I usually just say, "Oh, Margo with an X."
That's nice. I was actually thinking about it. You're really like, you know, you're really writing in a French manner. I really like it. I was like, I like this girl.
I didn't pick it. My parents did, but
but you know, you can write Margot as O-T.
Yeah.
But I really like that you're putting it in.
Well, that's I-U-X. Yeah. They've named me after a wine, and it's spelled M-A-R-G-A-U-X. So set me up.
That's a cool name after wine.
Well.
I actually, it's funny talking about the names. I just wanted to mention, I didn't have my name for 3 months.
Whoa, when you're born?
Yeah, my parents couldn't decide on my name for 3 months.
Whoa, don't they figure that out before you're born?
No, because I think my father really wanted a guy, like a boy. So, and that time they didn't have, you know, like the x-rays or whatever you call it in English. So then I was born and they weren't prepared somehow. And it was very funny because my grandmother, every week they were changing the name. So I had like Meline, Narine, Armine. So my mom was, my grandmother was saying like, Eshapate Meline, Eshapate Armine. It means like, you know, this week you're Meline, the other week you're going to be Armine. For 3 months, they couldn't decide.
Wow, that's a really long time.
I know, can you imagine? Yeah, so but funny. Then my father came at, you know, he came home and he just dropped the document, you know, my birth certificate, and he said, Nune, that's it. So, yeah.
That's funny. Do you mind playing an Armenian song?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay.
I'm going to play Komitas.
Okay. Since we talked about it so much, it'd be nice to...
Of course. It's going to be Komitas Tsinanitsa.
Okay.
Apricot tree in English. Thank you.
That really is unlike anything, really.
Oh, yeah, I have special feelings about Komitas, and he's really incredible. Sad me, it's him.
Wow. So is that a piece you found in the library?
It's actually, no, it's a pretty well-known piece, Apricot Tree, but actually, funny enough, Armenians think that it's a very, you know, very... Not funny, but like happy song. A lot of people think that it's a
really.
Yeah,
that didn't sound happy to me.
It's not at all.
And a lot of Armenians.
It's not happy. Is not the word. I'm forgetting my English right now. But you know, more like self-asserting song. They know they think it's a yeah, it's more happy song, but it's not. It's about the feelings of the guy. And if you go through lyrics of the song, which I found somewhere, it's actually a very sad song. And he's saying, you know, that he's drawing his sorrow into the water. And, you know, like, Tiranitsar, he says, like, don't bloom, you know, don't make the apricots grow, because, you know, there's too much sorrow around. I mean, yeah, and I'm talking about it and I have goosebumps, you know.
I mean, that's what I felt. I was like, this is really intense.
And a lot of interpreters are actually singing it in a very, you know,
positive?
Yeah, positive way, but it's not. I mean, yeah. it's a very sad song.
It felt really sad. I think you conveyed that too.
Well, because I found the lyrics, because actually it's funny, because before I was playing that, I was playing in a more assertive manner, but once I found the lyrics, I read it, I'm like, oh my god, it's not the yeah. interpretation that he wanted to. It's a really sad song.
Yeah, I really like sad music for some reason.
Because you're Armenian.
Yeah.
No, but his art is mostly, you know, he has beautiful songs, but he's especially, you know, he was really touched and influenced by genocide and what he saw.
Oh, wow.
Of course, he was very... And you know, funny, just, I don't know if you know the fact that Turkish government knew about him, because Komitas was born and he was working in Turkey, and he didn't speak Armenian language until he was 12 years old, and he learned Armenian, of course, and he perfected it, but Turkish government didn't touch him, and that's something that must be not forgotten, I think, must be remembered, that they actually sent him away, but they didn't kill him, because, you know, that the government, what they did the 24th of April, they gathered all, and actually my birthday is on 23rd of April.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, very close to 24th, but they gathered the intelligentsia, they gathered the writers, the musicians, the poets, the sculptors, the painters, the lawyers, the doctors, and they burned them all, they killed them all. And that's why we're having the 24th of April, because it didn't happen in one day, but they killed the, you know, the best blood, you know, the thinking blood of our nation there. And they didn't touch him. They sent him away, even though he lost his mind after. But, can you imagine how... He's a genius.
I felt so guilty, too, that all these other people had to die and he didn't.
But, you know, I really have a special feeling for him, because not only he's an incredible ethnomusicologist, you know, he highlighted our music in France and in Paris, and, you know, composers like Debussy and Saint-Saëns and Ravel, they learned about Armenian music through him, you know, and his contribution into Armenian culture, and not only Armenian, Turkish, Greek songs, he collected them all. It's impossible to overestimate.
Wow. Well, that was very beautiful. I feel very lucky that I got a private performance.
Thank you.
I'll be bragging
it's
about
not going to be private
tonight.
If you got a podcast it.
Yeah. Like, I saw her before she was at Carnegie Hall. So if people want to hear and check you out and figure out where you are and see recordings. I actually saw some of your videos, and you almost like dance in some of the songs.
Really? I'm really moving, and I'm having the difficulty right now already. I just picked up the dress for Carnegie Hall. I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna be able to move in it, because it's really long. So wish me luck, so I don't fall in it, because I do actually
well,
move a lot.
Well, then you'd get press.
Yeah.
Then you'd be famous.
Yeah. No, I actually do move a lot while I'm playing. I'm trying to. It's just the way I am. I think I'm just a very restless person, and already
well,
you know,
feel it too. I love it. It's like you be add visuals to it.
Yes, so, but I'm not doing it on purpose, of course. You have, nothing is very, you know, nothing is artificial. Yeah, I do move a lot, but I don't, I dance, but not on the stage. Not
you do
yet,
everything,
I don't know, maybe,
it seems like.
I actually,
you dance.
Yes, and I have my poetry book. I didn't mention that. I have a poetry in Russian and French.
Oh my god, you could do your own trio. You could record you playing, then you can record you singing, and then you can dance to it.
I have a project which is very similar to that, but it's not going to be only me, but yeah. That's,
well, but you could. Like, you could play the violin, and then you can put singing over it. You're singing, and then you can dance, and then you can make your own music video.
You know, I tend to be professional what I do. I can't sing really well, so we're going to skip the singing.
Oh, I thought you were.
I was, but, you know, to be a good singer, I have a huge respect for singers, because it's very hard, and you really have to. It's like the instrument. You have to work hard. So I just didn't have time. I was very promising, and I had a really nice voice.
You had to pick which one.
Yeah, but it's only in the shower right now.
Yeah. Well, I actually lost my voice at ulcers on my vocal cords, and it was this whole long thing. Mm. And I had to kind of learn how to do better techniques. And my vocal vocalist, I was like, am I a soprano?
And I don't think so.
He said it was.
Really?
Yeah, he said I was a coloratura soprano.
No way. Yeah. Oh, my God.
And so I texted James, our friend, who's very into music, and one of my other very good friends who's super, all he listens to is classical. And I'm like, I just came from the voice doctor. I have really good news. So they're like, what is it? I'm like, I'm a soprano.
Oh, it's so funny. I was thinking you were mezzo. Wow.
You know, that's this other guy.
Do you smoke?
No, it's because of my vocal issues. I have like a rasp. Oh. So I'm still, this just happened.
Recovering.
Not that long ago. Yeah.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I'm still learning techniques because I don't speak from my.
But I actually
lips.
Really like your voice. And I swear, like, the first thing that I noticed when you took your mic, I was like, I really like when it's. I have to work on my speaking, especially if I'm going to go to lectures, et cetera, et cetera. I really like when the voices, you know, are like more on the lower side. And that's what I was learning also in my courses, you know, that you really have to go like on the lower.
Well, it's. I actually have an episode with my vocal teacher. So I have like an ENT, a vocalist, and a vocal teacher. And I'm not even close to doing proper technique or, as they say, talking efficiently. Mm-hmm. And it's so temperamental, my vocal cords. And actually, a lot of it is tension in my throat that I can't even consciously control. But there's so much emotional stuff that's tied to it. And my speaking voice can be a B, sometimes it's a B flat. Like every time I go in, sometimes I'm unable to do mid range, and I can do head voice and I can go really high, but it's just weird. I'm learning all this stuff, but it's basically relearning how to talk.
Wow.
Or efficiently.
I would never. Well, I knew that it's a complicated. And of course, like all these politicians, they have a speaking, you know, like they have the voice training, et cetera, et cetera. I really like in your voice. There's a little crisp, you know, in your voice. I don't know how you say that in. I forgot the.
Like a rasp.
Not a horse. Horse.
It's kind of like a raspy.
Yeah, I really like it, actually.
It's
really
not supposed to be there. I think it's always going to be there because my vocal cords have like a little.
You know what?
Knot.
I really appreciate that you're putting so much effort and technique, but let's not forget that, for example, Edith Piaf, you know, the French singer, I mean, or even Charles Aznavour, like, they're not the most, you know, their vocal abilities are not the most outstanding, and there's still something in them, you know, I think it's very important for you, of course, if you're a comedian and, you know, you're in media and radio, but I think there's part of that, and there's also part of your personality, your charm, your persona. So just don't get too much in there. Yes, dig in there, but not too much.
Yeah, it's a lot I had to learn. It's all this emotional stuff, but it's just weird the connection and how it changes day to day and not getting freaked out because I don't want it to happen again. Mm. And I want to just be able to do what is the most efficient thing so I'm not abusing my vocal cords, because you have a muscle attached to them, and my muscle is basically weak. It doesn't have to do anything. So my vocal cords are doing all this work, and they're not supposed to. But I think it's going to be a long process, but it is a thing. I'm like, oh, what is my voice today going to be like?
Oh, really?
Well, little things affect it, and I don't even know what they are, actually.
Don't drink hot coffee or cold hot coffee or
something.
Well, no, like
that actually doesn't. That never touches
effect?
Your vocal cords.
Okay.
The only thing that touches your vocal cords is air, and you can breathe in steam, which is actually really good for them.
Okay.
Not hot.
Wow, I didn't know that. Okay.
Because it's it helps hydrate them. And you need to be hydrated, and for me, and you shouldn't eat right before bed. Like 4 hours was what the doctor told me. And if you drink
alcohol. Well, it's good for your shape as well, so.
Yeah, that's true. But when you drink alcohol late and eat, it basically, the thing that, I forgot the name, that keeps your stomach acid and stuff down, it loosens. So part of it, I think, was stomach acid. Oh. It was just all these different things I wasn't doing. I don't smoke, but it was all these things I was doing that eventually just added up and.
You know, as a listener and as someone who's been interviewed for like this last hour, it's very important if you get tired, you know, of the voice or not of your host. And I really enjoy talking to you. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling that I could have said it, you know, off the mic, but I'm really enjoying listening to you and hearing your voice. So, I mean, it's, and I'm a musician. I mean, you know, I have very sensible ears. And that, I swear, that was the first thing I noticed when you took the mic.
That's funny. I appreciate it. I don't really think about it that much. I just think about...
Of course, we want to be professionals, as professional as possible.
And, yeah, and do it sufficient. Because when it happened, it was beyond devastating. You know, when they
told me... It's like losing your instrument, of course.
Exactly. But I knew there was a reason it happened. I'm like, the universe is telling me I really need to shut up.
Well,
right,
I just say that to you, like, you know, physical is so connected to what we do.
It is.
We really have to take care of
that. And emotional and mental too. Like meditation, I can't push that in.
I'm so overactive person. I really have to start meditating, and it's been a subject in my. And it's so funny. I was thinking about it today while I was jogging, of course, that I have to put more energy in not going to gym, but actually into yoga and meditation. And I'm really trying to calm up my mind. My mind has been thinking about a thousand things at the same time.
Off air, I'll give you some tips and I'll send you my meditation stuff.
Yeah, but it's I think it is important. And when I was speaking about being connected to your body, it is important. And it's not, you know, it's very much in fashion right now, but it's really not about fashion. It's really is about being your, just call me your monkey, you know, like, exactly.
Connecting to who you really are instead of all the babble that you have. You've been amazing and you're so inspiring.
Thank you.
I think what you're doing is so important and that you're just going to go beyond what
you
can even imagine. But what people want to hear more and see you, like, how can they do that?
So, speaking about social media, they have my YouTube channel, Nuneme Leak. There is a Facebook page, fan page, Nuneme Leak. You're more than welcome. And there's also Instagram, Nuneme Leak. I think, Nune and then dash, down dash. I don't know how you
say it. Underscore, I think.
Yeah, underscore Melik. And there's a website, nunemelik.com. So everything with my name. you can find me easily. And, of course, you can, I don't know if it's going to be before Carnegie, but anyways.
Yeah, I'd love to hear about that. And you're going to, do you say break a leg to music?
Yes, yes.
All right. Break a leg, not literally with your dress, but seriously, so amazing. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you, Margot. It's been a pleasure.